I need somebody help, not just anybody help. You know I need someone help. Well, when I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
Can't we get to the White Album?
All right. Welcome back to the that album.
The White Album. Yeah. That's the best one.
Welcome back. Hey, it'll come up down the road.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday is with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And before we move any further, we are going to be offering a family four-pack for tomorrow's Brewers game. And to call a number three, you get a family four-pack for tomorrow's Brewers game. A family four-pack, that's, you know, it's a pretty good get. They're playing the St. Louis Cardinals. So call it, what did I say, Calvin, call a number three?
Call a number three sounds great.
Yeah, and Calvin will take care of all the rest of it. All right. In the meantime, it's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, Tennessee, where just a couple weeks ago, you wanted to say something.
No, I was just going to say Tennessee. I used to be in the United States of America and abide by our Constitution, but...
So what happened? Well, there were three Democratic legislators... Two black men and one white woman, Democrats, who supported, we just had a horrific killing there several weeks ago. Three males and three adults and three children were murdered. And so these three Democrats, there were marches with children and grade school children, middle school children. They have had enough of children being killed, you know, and they're just a little tired and frustrated of watching all of these children die. So they did what people obviously have a right to do. They protested
they protested on the matter of gun control, yes. As I understand. And I think the thing that they did that was subject possibly to getting beyond the First Amendment right was they did it on the floor of the Tennessee legislature during a session, and so they were subject to the rules of order and decorum. And because they broke decorum, apparently, for like one of the only times in the history of legislatures, the legislature took the action of expelling them, right? Is that what I
meant? Yes, yeah. That's exactly what took place. So I don't even think the legislature understands the impact of what they did. So, Sandy, you know this much better than I, but each one of those legislators that they got rid of represent about 80,000 people, and that's their representation.
Right. So they eliminated the representation of these people pending whatever special election or whatever it is that will have to replace them. But what's extraordinary to me is that this was not behavior that was like, you know, the U.S. Senate had the famous situation of the caning where one senator caned another and, you know, he almost killed him, gave him a concussion, the senator from Massachusetts, back in the 1800s. And that didn't result in an expulsion. This wasn't a physical confrontation. This was simply a demonstration that was contrary to the rules of order at the time. And so they took this extraordinary step. I guess gun rights are in fact a political third rail in Tennessee, because apparently, if you're black at least, and you demonstrate against gun rights in Tennessee, you're toast.
So let me ask you, Sandy. So the legislature. Are they going to win this?
Or? Well, win this? I mean, I don't think.
Is this going to stand?
And the only way it wouldn't stand would be a constitutional question under the Tennessee State Constitution. they'd have to be ruled be out of bounds. And I don't know what, I'm not familiar with the Tennessee state constitution, but apparently there is a provision that allows for the expulsion based on the majority vote, which I'm not sure it requires any grounds whatsoever if you have a
political
majority vote.
So this, again, is states' rights.
Probably a matter of states' rights, and it's a matter of state law and the state constitutional law. But, you know, the what is extraordinary and reprehensible about it will stand regardless of whether the decision stands, and I suspect that it will stand.
So the court of public opinion matters at times, and I think that this is going to be a national black eye, and that the pressure that I'm from everywhere I'm reading, this is a major story all over this nation.
Well, it is true that when states have done things that are out of bounds, businesses have taken steps to essentially sanction states, so that businesses have decided to move from such states. Businesses have decided to change the level of business they do in the state. There are various ways for the public at large and the United States public at large to cause the marketplace to impact a place like Tennessee that would be acting out of bounds. And I would say that this conduct seems to be quite out of bounds in terms of the principles of our American democracy.
Well, you know, Sandy, there's also a racial overtone to it. The two guys that were jettisoned were black males, and there was a white female Democrat as well, who they did not kick out. And so you're going to add that to this mix. And so it's going to be hard for them to explain again. At the root of it, Sandy, was the fact that these three children were murdered. And they were, it's not like they were protesting something that, you know, was outlandish. It was, hey, we got to do something about guns. So there are going to be more people who support that. And plus the people's rights to protest those things. And as you stated, they're a little bit different when it comes to following the rules of what the legislature has to say. But I would think that in the end, there are people who think that enough of these killings and people having access to you know, weapons and those kind of things, that, you know, we got at some point in time say enough is enough. The root of what they were protesting, Sandy, is what many of us agree with.
Well, and at most what they were guilty of was civil disobedience, right?
That
was a passive kind of a thing. I don't know. It was extraordinary to me. I was kind of appalled that a state legislature would feel compelled to take those kind of steps. And, you know, the fact is these people were elected by constituents who believed that they were the best representatives to represent them in the Tennessee legislature, and now the legislature has stripped them of that.
Well, you know, Sandy, the other part of it is it's a Republican-controlled legislature that really didn't have to do it. I mean, what do they gain by it, Sandy? I mean, really, if we the balance of all of this, what can they gain outside of negative publicity, which is what they're getting now, and that they're going to be getting for a long time to come?
Well, one of the problems is I think people get into trouble that have power because the only explanation for what they do is the answer is because they can. And when people are exercising power simply because they can, which could be the only explanation here, why did they do it? Because they could. That ends up not being a very good explanation.
All right, Tom, you want to weigh in on it? Go ahead.
I do, because what happened was, one, these two absolutely intelligent, incredible,
yeah,
what
well
we
spoken.
Want in our Congress people. I won't say well-spoken, just they were, I mean, these guys are the future. And the thing is, I watched the whole thing last night, and here's the rub, if you want to know the truth. One, they're black. Two, they're 27. Three, they don't join the old boys club or the old Senate club, and they don't stand straight in line the way they want. They actually did what the constituents came to that Capitol to do, which was to say, what are you going to do about this? how many more people are going to die? Tennessee is probably the largest, or is the state that has more killings than anything else. And all they were doing was doing the AR-15. The only thing that the one gentleman did was he brought a blowhorn onto the floor because of the fact that the Speaker of the House kept turning his microphone off. So he had to speak up somehow because they kept on, and they have a tendency, I guess, to do this when the Democrats are speaking, where all of a sudden the Speaker of the House, he goes, Sisson, I think his name is, something like that, he goes and he shuts off their microphones. So he took the blowhorn in with him because, sure enough, they went and shut off his microphone when he was speaking. But they're mostly angry because these guys are not, you know, just like the squad, when the squad was actually very fighting for their constituents rather than just going along to get along with the whole group. They were much more effective as people, and they actually looked like they cared about their constituents. These two gentlemen care about their constituents. These two gentlemen are not the you know, let's go to Washington and just get along with the old boys club. I'll tell you what, that was the most, I am so disgusted to be a white man after seeing the display, and the way that they talked down to these two gentlemen was, I watched the whole thing on C-SPAN last night.
Yeah,
and it was like, are you kidding me? They put them on trial.
You know what it reminded me of, Tom? It was, you know, 50 years ago, and the way, you know, black elected officials were treated in Congress. And so these young men did not get a fair shake in this. There's no question about it. As Sandy stated, what was done was legal, but whether or not it'll stand, is something altogether different.
But the thing is, they never broke their oath. They may have broken a rule, but they never broke their oath. There was no reason for expulsion. There have only been four other times in the history of Tennessee where it's been people have been expelled from the house. And these gentlemen did not do anything that even came close. You know what, Earl? These people did exactly what
they thought. Hey, Tom, we got to go.
These guys are not politrickers.
Tom, we got to go.
These guys aren't politrickers.
Well, they martyred them, and they're going to pay the price for that. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Be right back. Won't you please help me?
See it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run a risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And before we go any further, you know, when we have these ticket giveaways and others, you can only win once in a month. So, got to get somebody else a chance, to win the tickets. But anyway, Sandy, finally, you know, one of the things that we heard from the Republicans over the last 2 years is that the shutting down or the leaving of America in Afghanistan, withdrawal, that it was the worst thing that ever happened in the world, and we got to find out what was at the root of it, because there were crimes committed, and oh man, those poor people, and Joe Biden, he did the worst thing in the world. Okay, and we're going to investigate it. Okay, they've done it. They've investigated it. And they're not satisfied, the Republicans. Now the truth has come out on what happened during the withdrawal. And yes, some people died. But Sandy, is that, you knew people were going to die if we're pulling out of a nation that we've been basically controlling, right? I mean,
you know, the fact was that we've lost
the government.
We'd lost thousands of men over the period of time, and CJ is quick to remind us that we lost 13 people during that particular withdrawal, and that a numbers of people who had been allied or at least compromised by us in the process of our involvement there, compromised against the local power structure, were left behind. Of course, we've done that every place we go, because one of the processes we go through when we try to nation build or when we intervene in abroad is we tend to buy lots of friends. I mean, you know, we compromise people by, in Vietnam we did it with all kinds of Vietnamese and the Hmong and the Montagnards who were purloined to support us. And when we left, of course, we left them in a vulnerable position, and the famous helicopter flight out. So, I mean, yes, when we end wars, they don't go, it doesn't go well, it doesn't go, but we should think about that more when we get into the war. The end of the war is really the result of the beginning of the war and the conduct of the war. And I'm all for, actually, a lessons learned process, and I think I'm glad that the White House and the military did a lessons learned with respect to the withdrawal. I don't really have much of a problem with Congress investigating it, because I think Congress ought to be materially involved in our foreign policy. But I think turning it into a political football is a mistake. I think what we ought to do is do an objective lessons learned and figure things out. We ought to do a lessons learned with respect to our foreign policy. Why don't we investigate the huge mistakes we've made about getting into these conflicts, Iraq, the 18 years or 20 years. We went at least 18 years beyond our mission in Afghanistan in terms of turning it into a nation-building effort instead of a track-down-the-Al-Qaeda effort. And Vietnam, huge mistake. We made mistakes, many of them, and yet we don't do lessons learned about the fundamental mistake, which is the wars we get into and the foreign policy notions that lead us into those wars. And I'm simply saying, look, let's stand up right now and start looking at, for instance, the Taiwan mistake before we make it. Let's evaluate the Ukraine mistake before we complete the process of potentially making a huge mistake.
You know, Sandy, Joe Biden admitted that, yeah, we could have done some things differently. And as you stated, we were there 20 years. And so we were the ones who propped up the government of Afghanistan.
I would say government in quotes, because I think the fact was that we never really installed a government that worked. It's always been a country of warlords. It's always been a country. It was a country that the Taliban, in its own way, regulated before we got there, and in the vacuum that was there afterwards, that's what's happened. We didn't really change Afghanistan except maybe destabilizing it even more than it was before we went into it. And of course, Iraq is another story where they had a stable government, maybe not one we liked. Actually, the Saddam Hussein government was our ally during the period when they were fighting Iran.
Right.
And when they decided to think about nationalizing oil interests, they became our enemy. And Saddam Hussein became sort of a sui generis guy who operated independently, and suddenly he was our enemy. We had to nation build there. That was a total disaster.
You know, Sandy, never heard any crocodile tears from the American people when in that Iraq war, over 2 million people died.
Yeah.
It was a bloody, bloody.
And we were basically, we were providing material weapons to Iraq. And
yes.
Iraq was our ally because they were fighting Iran. And Iraq was our client state.
It almost sounds, well, we'll talk about it after the break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open. We'll be right back. you, you know,
and fighting, my friend. I have always thought that it's a crime, so I will ask you once again. Try to see it my way, only time will tell if I am right or I am wrong. While you see it your way, there's a chance that we might fall apart before too long. We can work it out. We can work it out.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, before we move on, last hour, half an hour, we were talking about what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't evacuation, but when we left.
Yeah, it was evacuation.
Okay, evacuation. And let's go to Jim from Appleton. Hey, Jim, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
A little farther in time to when we first started our nation-building experiments down in Central and South America, which had a direct impact on the so-called border crisis.
No question.
We are now facing.
No question.
Why didn't we learn from that? That was 40 years ago.
Well, and Chile, you know, we have our adventures in Chile and in Honduras. I mean, our international adventures have not turned out well, you know. The people we've supported have not turned into necessarily good people. And the reason we choose our bedfellows internationally and the reason we decide to do things internationally does not seem to be the subject of any public knowledge or public debate. And I think it's a huge problem. I think that we're on the verge of the same kind of a thing with Taiwan without having a clear understanding. You know, last week I was pointing out the fact that Taiwan is not recognized as a country by anything but 12 island nations, essentially, other than Guatemala, in the world. And it's not in the UN. It's not recognized as a nation by the UN. And yet we're on the verge of possibly getting involved in a huge problem with China. And meanwhile, we can see the rest of the world lining up in a way that's at least trying to liberate themselves from us, if not be a counterforce to us in terms of the U.S. dollar, which from the standpoint of Tom, Dick, and Mary, the U.S. dollar losing its prominence in the world would have an impact on all of us. So, you know, these things are all connected.
That would be devastating.
Pardon?
Losing the dollar as the fiat currency would be devastating to this country.
Devastating. And we're, you know, we aren't even talking about it in the media, but steps are being taken right now that are clearly moving well in that direction. And with an economy like China, if we don't figure out a way to coexist and to prosper on a coexistent basis, and if we think that we can throttle the rest of the world so that we remain the sole economically dominant country in the world, that policy is doomed.
Hey, Jim, I have to agree.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, man, thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening. You know, Sandy, you almost, what's going on in Israel right now and Gaza, it never ends, right? I mean, it arrests for some time, but there's got to be, at some point in time, there's got to be a solution. And it can't just continue down the path that it is now. And
well, from my standpoint, I think that the United States—
And you've been to Israel.
Well, yeah, but the U.S. inability to be critical of or to otherwise materially influence Israel and its conduct is like a political third rail. It's almost like the tail wags the dog. Israel seems to call the dance as far as its relationship with the United States. But we can see in the Mideast that the dynamic in the Mideast is changing. Iran and Saudi Arabia are beginning to form something much closer to a detente, and that Saudi Arabia was long positioned in a sort of a sub rosa way by the United States as the protector of Israel. And we were arming Saudi Arabia to the teeth with the understanding that Saudi Arabia would stand in the way of any united Arab movement against Israel. But as Israel gets, if Israel is going to be more militant about its dealings with the Arab world, and as the Arab world and the Muslim world reformulates itself in the Mideast, we could find the United States and Israel standing alone vis-a-vis a group that would include Russia, the Mideast, and China. Because we can see right now that there are clearly relationships formulating between Saudi Arabia, China, and Russia. And so with all of those changes, I would simply say, Israel, beware. Everyone has known for decades that a Palestinian state is the only long-term solution for peace in Israel, and we don't seem to get there, and now we're going backwards.
You know, Sandy, this is an article that I read in The Nation several days ago. I never got around to it, but now is the time that I think we should talk about it. The tragic U.S. choice to prioritize war over peacemaking. And so in a brilliant op-ed published in the New York Times, the Quincy Institute's Trita Parsi explained how China, with help from Iraq, was able to mediate and resolve the deeply rooted conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia, whereas the United States was in no position to do so after siding with the Saudi kingdom against Iran for decades. The title of Parisi's article, "The U.S. is Not an Indispensable Peacemaker," refers to former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright's use of the term indispensable nation to describe the U.S. role in the post-Cold War world. The irony of Parisi's use of Albright's term is that she generally used it to refer to U.S. war-making, not peacemaking. That's it, Sandy.
Yeah, I mean, they know.
That's what's at the root of these things.
Yeah, the neocon, neoliberal process, the Pax Americana concept of America's role after the end of the Cold War, where we were the lone standing superpower, has continued to color our whole view of the world when the world has changed, and the world is changing away from that. And if we don't recognize it, we're simply going to play the role of every reactionary. By reactionary, I mean people who are trying to hold on to the past and reacting against the future. That's kind of the definition of reactionary. And we are behaving internally in our domestic politics and externally in our foreign politics in a totally reactionary mode. Reactionaries never win.
Sandy, we're on the wrong side of things. And I know that's hard for our fellow countrymen to fathom. But if we just think ourselves and separate ourselves from what we see on television, and you say, we can't be everywhere. We can't run the world. The world is not ours to run, right?
Yeah, I would say the main thing that we have to get is the second part, which it's part of our fiber right now, part of our American view of the world. It's the manifest destiny. Extended manifest destiny was the theory in the 1800s that the United States would move across the American continent and would inhabit all of it and bring the benefits of Western civilization to all of the American continent. Well, now we seem to have extended this concept of manifest destiny to the world. And until we get over that view, which is largely the West's view, that was the view of colonization. You know, one of the justifications for the British colonization of various third world parts of the world were that they were bringing civilization and the rule of order and law to these people, okay? That didn't really play out after 1950, right? The colonies, by 1960, colonies were dead, you know? And so we ought to understand that holding on to colonies was a reactionary view, and our holding on to the view of world dominance is reactionary.
You know, Sandy, as you constantly want to point out, all of these things and these views are at the expense of the American people in the long run.
Yeah.
And if you ask the American people if they're willing to sacrifice all these things that they're sacrificing, that we hear people say we can't afford anymore, it's at the expense of these things, well, right? I mean,
well, and the defense establishment tries to make the argument that all these foreign military things that we're doing are to save American democracy, but no one ever connects the dots. No one ever explains how it is that the dispute that exists between Russia and Ukraine is going to essentially affect the American democracy. And no one even actually demonstrates the logic behind the notion that Putin would go from, you know, the argument is being made, well, if Ukraine falls to Putin,
he's going next.
He's going to Poland.
Yeah.
And no one has actually ever demonstrated the likelihood of that. And in fact, the moderation that Putin has used, and he's been as careful with his approach to this war in terms of not firing any weapons that land in both Poland or any place. He's as careful about running into Article 5 of NATO as we are of running into a land war with Russia.
You know, Sandy, we constantly talk about other nations and what they're doing. And if you just follow the archives of our nation, we're a little bloodthirsty, right? I mean, we can talk about what somebody else is doing, but if you follow our history,
mm-hmm.
Which is what other nations are saying, but the American people don't know or either refuse to see it. You and I look at it, and I people say to me at times, you and Sandy are anti-American. And I'm saying, wait a minute. How are we anti-American?
No, I want to save America from itself. I want America to survive and thrive. You should look at the fact that Emmanuel Macron is in China right now, and France is cutting deals with China with respect to trade. They've just decided to add another assembly line for the Airbus airplane that is made by France, which is the only competitor to Boeing. You know, we ought to understand that. All of this lip service we give to trying to isolate China and make China the bad guy and someone that we are essentially moving in the direction of at least a Cold War, if not a hot war against, is contrary to the world's view of China.
No,
China is an indispensable part of the world. It has made itself so, and it is that.
So, again, if you talk with many American citizens, they'll say, well, they've stolen our intellectual property. Okay. All right.
Well, incidentally, I mean, we've talked about this in the past. Actually, the truth is that most of the fundamental stuff that is most important, we gave to them, okay? They have been involved, just like American companies are involved in commercial espionage. I'm sure they've been involved in that. They've taken ideas. They aren't subject to the patent law restrictions because they didn't sign the patent treaty. We haven't force them to sign the patent treaty. So we ought to understand that a lot of what they do is okay with international law. And maybe we think it's not kosher, but it is legal.
Well, maybe we think we control international law. I think that's kind of where we are. You and I know we don't. But well, I think as Americans, Sandy, We really do buy into, we own this thing.
I'm Buster Brown. I own this town.
I mean, really, Sandy.
Yeah.
And it may sound simplistic, but it's kind of, and that was okay a while back. It's not okay today.
Well, simplistic is the problem with the public's discussion of foreign policy. And simplistic is, you know, we're going to get into it, I think, with Speaker McCarthy and the, and the whole Taiwan thing. But the way we're toying with Taiwan now, without understanding our actual foreign policy, without having our government be clear with us domestically, is putting us in danger because our domestic politics and the macho nature of it is threatening something with China that, that we can't probably tolerate.
Oh, all right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be back.
Love me do. Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid.
Welcome back to 1968. But anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. I mean, it's Friday with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I think that in many instances, we've got our audience who hears these conversations we are having, and they almost may appear to them as we are being anti-American because we are having these conversations. How can you point the finger at our nation, you know, in any of these things? And as you and I were talking and constantly talk about, there's a vacuum that we are leaving in the global arena. We can't anymore just be the economic engine of the world, which we can't be anymore. We're not that. But Sandy, there is diplomacy used to be an area that we were known for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where is our diplomacy now?
Well, you were mentioning the article you're reading, but I think the problem with our diplomacy is we lose our credibility as a diplomat when we become an active combatant. And one of the reasons we can't forge a peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran is our very hostile situation
towards
Iran. So we can't possibly be a broker there. And so I think the more active we are in sort of from a military standpoint, the more military, you mentioned this before, but military bases seem to be the, you know, if we forge an alliance with someone or they form a peace, the next thing we want to do is put a military base. And our military bases around the world are immensely expensive. And they've been the source of friction. They were clearly a source of friction. It was arguably the beginning of Al-Qaeda was all about military bases in Saudi Arabia.
Well, let's try it. We're going to try it. Let's do this, Calvin. Calvin, we're going to try it. We're going to try to bring CJ on. And here's his response. Good morning, CJ. You say what?
Morning, Earl and Sandy. Well,
strength.
Just know that how failed policy this administration has Russia negotiating our peace deal, our arms deal with Iran. How brilliant is that, Sandy?
I don't know why you picked my name, but how brilliant is that? You know, you've been saying this for 2 years when you call in that Russia is negotiating our our arms deal with Iran, and I'm not aware that the arms negotiation with Iran, the arms deal, is even still under negotiation. I think it was, it is no longer in, under negotiation, but
because Iran won't negotiate with us.
So, well, okay,
but they won't. They were look
Russia at the table,
and was Trump negotiating with Iran? Trump is the one. Trump is the one who called for the execution of the general of the Republican Army of Iran, which caused a near war with Iran.
Time, Sandy, presently.
No, I don't understand. I just don't understand what the purpose of this call is. I don't understand.
So CJ.
I'm sure you don't, because you never look at this administration. You always
CJ. The issue is bigger than this administration. Can you understand that? It's America's policies through different and through decades that we're talking about.
And my discussion of these policies is by no means a defense of the Biden foreign policies. I'm an extreme critic of his policy vis-a-vis Ukraine. And I'm an extreme critic of the current ongoing policies towards Taiwan, okay? So,
well, let's look at this administration.
We're not looking at the administration. And we're not talking about partisan politics here. We're talking about policies.
If that doesn't speak loudly to the listeners that you won't and you don't, that speaks loudly.
Okay, CJ, let me tell you what speaks loudly. Thank you very much for your call. What speaks loudly is you seem to believe that you know, what's happening and the decisions that are being made in this nation are based on Democrat and Republican. It's not, man. It's bigger than that. Right? Both Democrats and Republicans are in agreement over things, unfortunately, that don't benefit the American people. You know, they both agree with the continued expenditures for the military. Doesn't matter who the president is, right? They continue to spend overwhelmingly money that can be used to support the American people and to get involved in and continue what it is they are doing. And that's choice, again, to use the verbiage of this article, the tragic U.S. choice to prioritize war over peacemaking. That's not just Joe Biden. That's not just the Democrats. Sandy, that's been an ongoing decision that's been made by both Democrat and Republicans, and it will always be.
Well, I think one of the sorry things is that we've developed this concept that foreign policy needs to be bipartisan and that we need to have bipartisan support for whatever our foreign policies are. That makes a lot of sense in a situation in which there has been a declaration of war by Congress, okay? And there has been a vote in Congress on some foreign policy point. And at that point, squabbling over it probably doesn't make sense and is inappropriate, right? So during World War II, I think the last declared war, I'm not sure if we declared war in Korea, needed to be cohesion. But subsequent to that time, we've just sort of honored foreign policy and said that it's kind of a third rail as far as political debate is concerned, when in fact it really ought to be the subject of open discussion and open debate. Whether it's political or not, it ought to be the subject of discussion.
All right. Have to go to a break. We'll be right back. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.